And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Machuda.
And welcome, everyone. Well, that was a different introduction, but it's good to be with you today. I am Gary Machuda, and you have entered into the Apologetics Dojo, which where we explain and defend the faith. Today, as always, it's great to be with you, and we're always knocking out these great apologetics topics. And one thing we want to do is try to develop our minds and our abilities to share the faith competently and think through difficulties so that we can help others. And so today's program, we are going to dive into an even better or more in-depth hands-on apologetics topic. Wouldn't you love to learn how to think like St. Thomas Aquinas, the angelic doctor? Well, I certainly would. And coming on our show as guest is Dr. Kevin Vost. Dr. Kevin Vost wrote this very cool book, and he's going to share with us on how to think like Aquinas, the sure way to perfect your mental power. So we're going to beef up our intellects and learn how we can share the faith, explain the faith, learn the faith like the angelic doctor. Good stuff. And, of course, we're also going to have our exercises that we normally do. That's also part of our mental training. We're going to talk about finding the fallacy, which today is the fallacy of division, and also meet the early church father, who is Clement of Alexandria. And as always, you are part of the program. So maybe when Dr. Voss comes on the show, you might have a question about how to help him understand material, learn material, memorize material. He's the man to talk to. Give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. And as always, you can send us email or your questions at questions@handsonapologetics.com. That is questions@handsonapologetics.com. That comes straight to the dojo. And it's time for me to give the shout out to those watching live stream on YouTube and Facebook. Hello, everybody. It's great to see you. Great to see familiar names. The house has an echo mic. Yeah, I'm hearing it too in my headphones. It's almost like doing announcements at some big baseball stadium. I'm sure Richard is working on it, folks. So hang on there. Yeah, it will just be make me sound more authoritative by hearing a slapback echo. How about that? Well, hey, we got something interesting. I always try to keep my eye on the news and share with you the latest developments that can help in defending and explaining the faith. And there was an article, let's see, it was March 31st article that came to my attention from the Times of Israel, where a tiny first temple find could be the first proof and aid to the biblical King Josiah. Yes, a rare seal impression from the 8th century B.C., bearing the name of Nathan Melech, was found in an archaeological dig in Jerusalem of an Iron Age administrative center in the city of David in Jerusalem. And there were two seals found. One was a seal that belonged to Ikar, son of Mattaniah, and the other seal was a clay seal belonging to Nathan Melech, servant of the king. Now, what's interesting here is there is a Nathan Melech who is mentioned in 2 Kings as being part of the royal court of King Josiah. And what makes this discovery more important is the context, because what they're doing is they're unearthing what appears to be an administrative building that was used during the time of King Josiah. And so the finding of the seal with that particular name that's in Scripture is kind of like a two-run homer, since we're talking baseball, right? Two-run homer for archaeologists. So what does this do? Well, there's always been some skepticism about whether or not the much of the information in the Old Testament is historically accurate. Did it actually exist? And, you know, people have doubted the existence of David and Solomon and other Davidic kings as being part of folklore. But what's really cool about this find and a lot of other finds that have been coming about is that, you know, we're finding a lot of archaeological proof that of the historicity of these individuals in the Old Testament. So it's welcome news, I think, to our ears because I think the more information, the better, and the better we can share the faith, explain the faith, and base it on fact, right? Very good. So why don't we jump into our exercises for today, the finding of the fallacy exercise. The finding a fallacy exercise for today is the fallacy of division. And division fallacy is the flip side of composition. But let's talk about division. Division is when one reasons that because something's true of the whole, it must be true of all the parts. Okay? So, for example, if someone says, well, most Catholics don't attend the church weekly, then John, who's a Catholic, must not attend the church weekly. So it argues wrongly since, you know, something may be true largely of a whole, then it must be true on the for the part. And so that is the composition, or not the composition, the division fallacy. Or someone could say most teachers aren't happy with their pay. Jan's a teacher, therefore she's not happy with her pay. Well, again, you know, something might be generally true for the whole, but it doesn't necessarily transfer to the part. So there you go. That's basically the division fallacy. Now, composition's the opposite. Okay, so if composition runs from, if it's true for the whole, it's true for all the parts. That's the fallacious reasoning behind it. Composition is, if it's true for the parts, then it must be true for the whole. So there are some fallacies that, you know, there's a flip side to them. And this is one of them, and that's the flip side fallacy of the division. All right. Yeah, boy, it's nice not to hear the echo. Although, I don't feel like an announcer anymore, so I did lose that little bit. But let's jump into the Meet the Early Fathers for today. The early church fathers, St. Clement of Alexandria, who lived roughly about AD 150, died about 211, 216. St. Clement is was born of pagan parents. He probably was born in Athens. And around the year 100, he became a Christian. And immediately started traveling to Italy, Syria, Palestine, seeking a Christian instructor for his own instruction. Finally, he came to Alexandria, Egypt, where he met the famed Pantanus, who was the first teacher of the famed school of Alexandria. And he was so attracted to this master that he settled there. In fact, he became a pupil of Pantanus, an assistant, and eventually, when Pantanus passed away, he succeeded him as the director of the school for catechumens, obtaining this position roughly around 200 AD. Two or three years, he was basically forced by persecution out of Egypt, and he eventually died in Cappadocia around the years 211, 216 AD, never to return again to Egypt. If you ever get a chance to read Clement, it's very complex work because Clement loved to take all sources, no matter where they came from, pagan, the Sibylline oracles, Christian sources, whatever, and bring them into service of the truth. And many times he dives into pagan folklore and stuff to show that even the pagans believe things that are in concert with the truth of Christianity. He's known for three books, especially the Exhortation to the Greeks, which was written sometime before 200 AD, the Stromatis, and or Miscellaneous, Miscellanies. I don't know how you pronounce that. So three big works, a kind of trilogy, and there's some debate amongst scholars as to whether he intended for these books to be a trilogy or not. Nevertheless, the first book, The Exhortation to the Greeks, is a book of exhortation. Again, like I said, you know, he tries to take all these different sources and shows how it points to the Logos, to the divine word, to the master of human history. And then he has his book on teaching called the Pedagogos, which is, you know, and Christian instruction. And then finally, the stromatis, which basically he, it's just little bits and pieces of things, kind of things that didn't fit into the other two books. It's interesting, the word stromatis is suggestive of tablecloths or bedcloths or even like throw rugs, which means more precisely like a patchwork quilt. So this last book of his is a, kind of a patchwork of, you know, different sources, different ideas, different things like that. Okay, so that is our early church father today, St. Clement of Alexandria. And coming up on the other side of the break, if you couldn't hear through the echo at the beginning of the show, we're going to have Dr. Kevin Vose come on and talk about how we can learn how to think like Aquinas, how to perfect our mental powers like the great angelic doctor. And that should be a lot of fun. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back in about a minute. What was the other thing I was going to mention? Also, just I haven't done this in a while, and I put a little note here, and then I forgot to do it. Also, please keep Virgin Most Powerful in your prayers. Please pray for us. We need your prayers and your spiritual support. Also, share us on social media. Tell your friends about us, because lots of great programming, not just Hands-On Apologetics, but all the great shows on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Share these programs. Let people know about them. And also, we appreciate your generous donations, because even though we're doing the Lord's work, we still have to pay our electric bills just like everybody else. So we appreciate your generosity in that regards as well. So coming up on the other side of the break, Dr. Kevin Vose is going to talk about thinking like Aquinas. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support, because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody, Hands-On Apologetics. Well, how much money would you give to learn how to sharpen your mental skills and think like the angelic doctor? Well, our guest today is going to help us work through and learn how to be able to share the faith, explain the faith, and learn the faith like the Angelical Doctor. And our guest is Dr. Kevin Vost. Dr. Vost taught psychology at the University of Illinois at Springfield, Lincolnland Community College, and McMurray College. He is a research review committee member of America Mensa, and which promotes the scientific study of human intelligence. He's written several outstanding books like The 1 Minute Aquinas, Memorizing Your Faith and Most Everything Else, Memorize the Reasons, Defending the Faith with the Catholic Art of Memory. And the book we're going to talk about is How to Think Like Aquinas, The Sure Way to Perfect Your Mental Powers by Sophia Press. Dr. Vost, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Thanks so much for having me on, Gary. And I want to say this is a special treat because I am a fan of your work. And when I was putting together that book, Memorize the Reasons for Catholic Answers, some years ago, your Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger was one of my most valuable resources.
Wow. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Was that you were working on a book on how to cure insomnia? Is that was?
No. But no. Yeah, it actually kept me awake at night going through the chapters. I remember particularly when I was writing a chapter on Apocrypha, Deuterocanonicals, that your book was very, very helpful and very well done.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, Doctor, usually when we have new guests come to the show, I ask them to maybe give like a thumbnail sketch of, their journey of faith. And I understand that that you were once an atheist.
Yes, that's right. I was raised a Catholic, Catholic grade school and high school, and, you know, had the sacraments at all for a brief time in my teens. I even discerned the possibility of a vocation to the priesthood. But in my late teens, I read the wrong kind of philosophy. And through, you know, rational, logical reasons, I unfortunately came to the conclusion that I couldn't believe in God anymore. Spent about 25 years in that state until, through a series of events in my early 40s, I came to read St. Thomas Aquinas for the first time. And to my amazement, my faith was restored by reading St. Thomas Aquinas. So that's part of the explanation of why I love to write books about him. He had such a profound influence on me. And just one other interesting little tidbit, you know, while I was away from the church, you know, I had a young family, I obtained a doctorate in clinical psychology, and my specialty area ended up being memory, both memory improvement techniques for young people. And then later in my dissertation research, it was we looked at what happens when you lose your memory in the course of a dementia like Alzheimer's, or what happens to your memory as you age. And I remember when I came back to the church that back in the days when I did my master's thesis and doctoral dissertation on memory, I'd come across the fact that St. Thomas Aquinas himself was one of the key figures in the history of these special memory techniques. So again, in my early 40s, it all came together in a most remarkable way. Through the stirrings of the Holy Spirit and the writings of St. Thomas Aquinas, I was able to come back to Christ in the church.
Wow. Yeah, wow. What a great story. And we're glad you did, because you've been very fruitful in this area. I didn't know that he was kind of a forerunner in coming up with memory techniques.
Yes, he... you know, some of these particular techniques that he wrote about in the middle of the Summa Theologica, you know, did go back to the ancient Greeks like Simonides, through Roman figures like Cicero. But Thomas's great teacher, St. Albert the Great, actually wrote a line-by-line commentary on the oldest book we had on these special memory improvement techniques. And Thomas was well aware of that. And he, you know, recommended them very briefly within the Summa itself. So I found that a real treat when I first came back to the church to be able to start writing books about what Thomas had to say about improving our memories.
Yeah, you know, that makes a lot of sense, because St. Albert the Great knew everything about everything. I always wondered, how in the world could he keep that straight, you know, all the information? And same with Aquinas as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And they transformed it because, you know, these techniques came down like as methods for public speakers to memorize the key points of their talks. But Albert and Thomas also brought it into the realm of moral virtue, because they said that memory is a part of the virtue of prudence or practical wisdom, because to achieve virtuous goals in the future, we're going to act in the present, guided by the lessons we've learned in the past. So they said that memory is very, very important, you know, because we operate from now into the future and not vice versa. So they showed how these techniques could also be used to memorize, you know, essential facts of our faith.
Wow. Yeah. It's intellect that recognizes the good, but it's the will that chooses the good that's recognized by the intellect. So if your intellect's faulty, you know, morally you're going to be faulty.
That's right. They go together hand in glove.
Yeah. So, I don't even know what questions to ask because that is totally new to me. Well, it makes so much sense because anyone who's familiar with St. Thomas Aquinas, in his writings, it's amazing how he can collate so much disparate information like scripture, early church fathers, Jewish sources, pagan sources, and it seems in writing so effortlessly, just call them to mind and, you know where they fit in.
Yes, exactly. And even in the specific area of memory, he did that. There were kind of two separate bodies of literature that, you know, came back down from the ancients, that the nature of memory or how the human memory works, and the main author was Aristotle. Then there are these techniques on how we can practically improve our memory that came from Cicero. And Thomas and Albert, they did the same thing. They synthesized those. They show how they mesh together. So they had separate writings on how our memory works. Then they had practical writings on how to improve them. And they synthesized it and tied it all together. I mean, it seems that Thomas did that with virtually any subject came across his path, and all kinds of important subjects, came across Thomas's path, or he put himself in that path.
Yeah. Do you find I'm a big fan of his other Summa, the Summa Contra Gentiles.
Yes.
That he'll take a proposition, then he'll have like 8 or 9 arguments to support it. And as you read through it, you notice a kind of recurring pattern that he will, you know, start at one place and then work to another until eventually you get the feeling like, okay, I think I know where he's going to go with that. Was there a kind of pecking order that Aquinas would use? Have you noticed that?
I see. You know, maybe it varies in different questions. You know, I've read the Summa Contra Gentiles, but I spend most of my study time on the Summa Theologica. Yeah. With the writing I do. But I mean, I think one thing in general is, yes, I mean, he's amazingly detailed. Even though he always sees the big picture, he sees all those details too, shows how they tie together. One feature of some of his writings, like the Summa Theologica and the book he did, De Malo, on evil, he would give a series of objections, you know, arguments from people who actually had a different conclusion than what he's going to give us. He lays all those out first in a very detailed way. They say sometimes he gives these arguments from other people better than those people did themselves. But then he very charitably shows you like where they fell short and how he came to the conclusion that he did. So maybe there was a misunderstanding or just a partial truth, and he puts it all together. In fact, one extreme example that comes to my mind, I did a book a few years ago called The 7 Deadly Sins, you know, based on Thomas's writings. And I think it's in his book on evil. When he talks about this idea of 7 deadly sins, you know, that aren't listed specifically, the list that we have in the Bible, you know, it developed, of course, through the tradition, the Eastern Church Fathers in the West. But I remember he had one question in there, whether it's even really appropriate to have this list of the 7 deadly sins, and are they the right ones? I believe he had either 21 or 23 objections of arguments against the idea before he goes through and says why this is the right idea, and then he addresses all of those. So yes, Thomas just had an amazing mind for thoroughly dealing with any topic he came across.
Yeah, and that's a great example to be set for those who defend the faith today, you know, to know your opponents and be able to use their arguments to kind of illustrate the truth. That's another genius of him. It seems like the objections he comes up with are ways to, like, shine light on a particular truth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and later in this book, How to Think Like Aquinas, I look at, you know, some classic logical fallacies. And you know, one of them that we hear about a lot today is a straw man. You know, if you're going to argue with someone, you don't address their real argument. You give kind of an easier version, a simplified version of it that's not accurate. And they say Thomas does the exact opposite. Before he is going to disagree with someone, he's going to say very clearly, showing that he understands what they have said and very honestly and fairly state that before he goes through and shows where it might fall short. So I think it's a wonderful lesson for us today, for anyone who's truly trying to get at truth, especially if they're discussing things, you know, with people who hold a different opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, and that changes the whole air in the room. I don't know if you've ever done that, but I've had a few occasions where I would talk to somebody and they'll give an objection, and I'll actually like make their objection even stronger, you know, yes. And, you know, buff it up. And usually when you do that, the other person, you know, becomes much more open to what you have to say because they know that you understand what their argument is. In fact, you know it maybe even better than they do. And that takes a lot of tension out of the room just by showing that you understand the other person's position.
Oh, I think it sure does. Yes, it shows respect that you've actually heard what they've had to say. You know, you might even give them some insights if you're capable of presenting in a clearer way than they did. And I think, too, it acknowledges, you know, that fact that, you know, we're made in God's image with the intellect and the will, as you discussed earlier. And that should give us a common ground. You know, if two people are sitting here, and we're truly trying to get at truth, you know. Truth exists out in the external world, and God gave us the instruments to get at it, you know, through our intellects and through language we can discuss with each other. So I think it's just a wonderful model and way of working together if we really are trying to get at truth by honestly, you know, hearing and even restating what the other person has to say on an issue.
Right. Yeah, and I think Aquinas, I think, believes the objections are true, but there's a problem in the reasoning. You know, it's like you came up with the correct answer, but you didn't put the equation together right. So what's beautiful about Aquinas is he affirms the truth in the objector, but then it shows where that little error kind of makes it go off to, you know, to affirm an error rather than the truth.
Certainly. Yeah, go ahead, Gary. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Just said, if it makes sense.
Oh, it sure does. In fact, just a very, very, very simple example just came to mind, you know, as we're talking about memory again. Because I remember it's in the middle of the Summa Theologica, the second part, the 49th question, the first article is whether memory is a part of prudence. And just one of the objections is that no, you know, memory is not a part of the virtue of prudence because prudence is a practical use of the intellect. And memory is just in the imagination. I mean, even animals have a memory capacity. So then, you know, Thomas goes on and says, well, yeah, it's true that memory, strictly speaking, you know, is in this sensitive level of the soul, which animals share to some extent. But in human beings alone, our intellect is able, in a sense, to reach down and change and enhance our memory. We can use, you know, logical reasoning. When we're trying to remember, we forgot something. Well, I'm going to retrace my path. We can use special memory techniques. So it says, yeah, the intellect can reach down and enhance memory.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Buddy, we're talking with Dr. Kevin Vost about How to Think Like Aquinas, The Sure Way to Perfect Your Mental Powers. It's a book out by Sophia Press. I highly recommend it because, it's great as an apologist to be able to be mentally sharp and be able to explain the faith with confidence and clarity. But it's also great because it helps you grow in holiness. And that's what we're all about, growing in holiness. Dr. Vost, does Aquinas ever give practical advice on how to learn the faith or study the faith?
Yes, he sure does. And in fact, I think, sometimes people can be daunted to read St. Thomas directly if they don't have a formal background in philosophy and theology. The works that we mentioned, the Summa Contra Gentile, the Summa Theologica, are very, very massive, massive works. But there is one very delightful and simple little letter that's been attributed to St. Thomas. It's known as a Letter of St. Thomas to Brother John on How to Study. And the story was this Dominican brother named John just asked for Thomas some advice. He's new to the order. He wants to seek the truth. How can he learn better? The motto of the Dominican order was Veritas, or truth, and one of their four pillars was study. So he's writing to Thomas for advice. Now, we don't know for sure who this brother John was, and some people aren't certain if Thomas actually wrote this or not, because we don't know when he did that. But we know he often did write letters like this, and everything in this beautiful little letter of common sense little pieces of advice, it can be found fleshed out in his other bits of writing. So this book, How to Think Like Aquinas, the core of the book is looking at this little letter of St. Thomas on how to study and then fleshing out each one of his little tips with a full chapter of advice that pulls from Thomas's other writings.
Beautiful. Yeah, so what's the first step? If we want to start thinking like Aquinas, we mentioned memory and the importance of memory. What's the first step that St. Thomas suggests?
Sure. If I have just a second, I'll read his introductory paragraph. It's very brief.
Okay.
He says, "Because you have asked me, Brother John, most dear to me in Christ, how to set about acquiring the treasure of knowledge, this is my advice to you, namely, that you should choose to enter by small rivers and not go straight into the sea, for difficult things should be reached by way of easy things. Such is therefore my advice on your way of life." And then I bullet pointed out about 12 different pieces of advice. But if I can just briefly go over that paragraph, I think one thing he says, most dear to me in Christ. So our first lesson from Thomas is that everything we're doing should be focused in Christ. He also talks about acquiring the treasure of knowledge. So he's saying that, knowledge about things of the faith is a worthwhile thing to seek. It is a treasure for Christians. And then he starts the basic advice, by this, I love this metaphor of enter by the small rivers and don't go straight into the deep sea. So start by simple, easy things, be open, be docile to the teaching of others, and then work your way into deeper matters, more difficult matters, as you build your own knowledge base by being open to the teaching of others. So his very little first specific piece of advice I summarize like this. Thomas says, be slow to speak and slow to enter the common room where people chat.
Interesting. Yeah, so this is kind of like the little way, except for learning the faith rather than the spiritual journey.
Yeah, that's right. It is like a little way, starting with the simple things, working towards what's more deep. And with his first precept, being slow to speak, he's, of course, advising us, to listen to others, to think things through before we talk about it. Very, very much a common sense idea, but one that's not always easy to follow. There's a scriptural background here. For example, be quick to hear and slow to speak, James 1:19.
Yep.
Or in Proverbs 17:28, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise when he closes his lips. He is deemed intelligent. And then I love this. I'm from Springfield, Illinois, and Abraham Lincoln, this was his town. Mm-hmm. And he was steeped in Scripture, and building on the same theme, he once quipped, "It is better to remain silent and seem a fool than to speak and remove all doubt." Yes. So I think there's all kinds of common sense wisdom in this little first bit of advice.
Yeah, beautiful. So for those who want to share and defend the faith, I guess the lesson would be, don't just go out and start sharing the faith. It's better to just remain silent and kind of get the lay of the land, you know, the arguments, the counter arguments, kind of work through that yourself until you feel like you're very solidly grounded in the truth and what common objections would be. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, yes, I would. In fact, he has a later precept where he says, put whatever you learn in the cupboard of your mind as if you were filling a cup to the brim. And there's an idea that went back, I think it's to St. Bernard of Clairvaux originally, that said some people act like a pipe. As soon as something new flows in, it flows back out. He said, be like a bowl, you know, let that knowledge, let it build up in you, fill you, yeah, and then overflow and share that overflow. So, yeah, I think there is some sense there. It's not that, you know, we have to be perfect in our knowledge of the faith before we start to share it, but that we should, yeah, be careful that we don't, you know, share beyond our current capacity to really understand adequately.
Yeah, I mean, personal experience, I remember when I first started off in apologetics and I would hear a great argument from Scott Hahn, first chance I get, you know, I'd spring it on a person, and then they would ask a question and I'd be totally lost because I was just repeating Hahn's words. You know, I never really thought about it or, you know, deeply investigated it. So great advice.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I know what you mean, you know, because I had the same experiences, similar experiences myself. And I think, of course, even a person as profound as Scott Hahn, he's obviously given you, a wonderful argument there. But while he himself, of course, knows all the background behind it, a newcomer to apologetics does not yet. And that's another thing I love about St. Thomas is that, you know, one of the popes said that Thomas so revered the teachings of the church fathers and the great doctors who came before him that in a way he acquired the intellect of all of them. So when Thomas gave his opinion, it was after, you know, years and years and intense study of all the great thinkers in the church before his time. So I think that's a really good lesson to us, too, that it's worth our time and effort really learning the faith deeply so as the time goes by, we can share it more effectively.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, so, he's so soaked in the fathers that, he can't help but quote the fathers or at least follow the same line of thinking.
That's right. Even like the Summa Theologica, he often quotes them where he's getting it. It's just, I think there's approximately 2,000 references just to St. Augustine in there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So what's his second advice? Where else do we go after we've shut our mouth and listened?
Sure. I combine kind of two little bullet points in the book. Hold fast to purity of conscience and do not cease to make time for prayer. Okay. And for that first one, hold fast to purity of conscience. If we think in terms of the intellectual virtue, again, of prudence, you know, being practically wise, you know, doing the right things, making the right moral choices. So that involves the intellect to know what's the right thing to do. But of course, as you said, to actually do the good, we also need to have our will in line. And to do that, we need to be able to counter our passions that might draw us in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. You know, our concupiscences, like things that might draw us to gluttony or lust. So instead of focusing on what we need to focus on and study, we're distracted by things of the body. Our fortitude may not be in line. We're fearful about some situations, so we're not buckling down and studying when we should. So, but I think basically what Thomas is telling us is that the intellectual virtues of prudence, guides us in controlling our passions, but also it works the other way around. We can't think as clearly as we should if we're overcome by our passions. So we need to learn how to rein in our passions, to ask God for his help to quiet those passions and desires so we can focus on what's truly important.
Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about for quite a while. There is this mysterious interchange between intellect and will that, you know, it's not moral intellectualism where if you know what's right, you'll do what's right. I mean, that's true to an extent. but our passions or even our virtues can help inform the intellect or strengthen the intellect, because we know that, you know, if you're engaged in a sinful activity or something, that it has a way of darkening the intellect or even bending the intellect to embrace something that it knows it's not true.
Yes, yes, exactly. You know, and Thomas deals with these kind of issues in pretty good depth. You know, for example, he talks about the virtue of continence, kind of when we're on our way to the virtue of temperance. Maybe there's a real conflict in us over some issue. We want to give in, but he's saying if we don't repeatedly, you know, if we resist a temptation repeatedly and repeatedly despite a struggle, we may come to the time when the struggle itself is gone. And you know, then we've moved from continence to temperance, where we're more at peace. The struggle has even been quieted in us. But for those virtues, continence and temperance, and for all of them, Thomas is constantly reminding us that, you know, we need to practice them. We need to build them. And then the second point of this chapter, he says, do not cease to make time for prayer. We also need to pray for them. And in fact, even for Thomas himself, who was known as this, you know, amazingly lofty intellect, he said he attributed more of his success in writing about the faith to prayer than to study. Because he says in prayer, we sit face to face and converse with the master teacher and with truth itself.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. And so in a way, that helps with memory too, because it's one thing to try to memorize mathematical equations, but it's a lot easier to memorize like real life examples of those equations, if that makes sense. So to understand the truth in the abstract is a lot harder than, you know, acknowledging the truth in prayer and contemplation, where you can kind of see concretely where that is.
Yeah, exactly. And Thomas, too, you know, even though he's known as this very, you know, profound person who can think in the highest of abstract terms and principles, he always wanted to tie things to what's concrete and tangible. But so that's the way God made us. Yes, we have intellects, unlike any other creature on earth, but like them, we also have external senses, and that's the starting road, you know. What we can ponder starts through what comes in through, given to us through what we can see and hear and so forth. So he always acknowledged that. He always acknowledged the power of concrete visual examples, even of spiritual things. That helps us remember, because our knowledge starts that way, these things outside. But I was thinking, you know, in the scriptures, of course, you know, Jesus knew this so well by teaching in parables, teaching in actual stories that make these fundamental principles concrete to actual people, actual events in their lives.
Very good. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matsuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're chatting with Dr. Kevin Vost on his amazing book, Aquinas, The Sure Way to Perfect Your Mental Powers by Sophia Institute Press. Highly recommend it. We're just touching the surface. There's so much great quotations and material in the book. And Doctor, you know, during the break, I was looking at our live feed from YouTube, and Jose asked, what's the best way to start learning Aquinas? Just read the Summa, or do you recommend some other way?
Okay, yeah. Ways to get into it. One would be to read, you know, some modern author's summaries of Thomas Aquinas. You know, there's all kinds of good ones out there. People like, you know, Peter Crafe, Professor of Philosophy, Professor Edward Fazer. I've done a book called The 1 Minute Aquinas. So those would be some good introductions. If you're not very familiar with Aquinas as the man, there's always G.K. Chesterton's famous a little biography of Thomas Aquinas, which is really profound. But if you wanted to read Thomas Aquinas himself, it might be nice to jump into one of his simpler works. There's one that Sophia puts out called the Aquinas Catechism that goes through a series of sermons he gave on things like the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Creed, that in very understandable language introduces you to the profundity of St. Thomas's thought. So that would be one. I think the Aquinas Catechism would be one good way to start.
Yeah, that's. I was just thinking that as you're going through your list, because that's a real simple. It's very short, it's profound, and you really do get a sample for how he thinks and reasons. But it's not as pedantic as like his Summas, like the Summa Gentiles or the Theologica.
That's right, and I would hope that people will eventually move to those, but it might be easier, a nicer start to start with something more simple first.
That's right.
Those narrow streams, those small rivers.
Right, exactly. Following St. Thomas's own advice. Very good. Well, let's see. It's hard to believe that. We're already in the last segment. What advice, let's maybe just pick two. What two things would Aquinas suggest in studying that you think would be most helpful for someone who wants to explain and defend the faith?
Okay, yeah. For explaining and defending the faith, I would say first, just a general principle. The theme behind this book is perfecting your mental powers. Sometimes we tend to think, you know, oh, I have a bad memory, or oh, I'm not very smart, or I'm not very eloquent, I can't defend the faith. Well, Thomas would have us know that God gave us all these potential powers that we can develop. There are ways we can remember better, so we can give those arguments out, you know, so we can speak more clearly. You can improve it, and Thomas has some advice on how to do so. But I would say just one more precept that I think is very important in our day is the one where Thomas says, put whatever you learn in the cupboard of your mind as if you were filling a cup to the brim. And I talk about this one in terms of the psychological concept of building a knowledge base. And I kind of say, you know, it's like the saying, you know, that it comes from the Gospels, you know, like the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. I say the knowledgeable, you know, get more knowledgeable. The more you take the time to learn, the more connections you can make, the more ahas, you know, when something new comes up, especially with matters of our faith, like knowledge of the scriptures, knowledge of the church fathers. But I think it's so important in our time because so many of us have gotten this idea, I don't really need to know things myself. I don't really need to remember things because I'm holding this thing in my hand called a smartphone that knows everything. You know, all I have to do is ask it a question, maybe even out loud. But here's the example I give for that, one of my favorite examples. I say, imagine you had to have a surgery. Who do you want to have operate on you? The world's most foremost IT expert, the computer guru who's going to be sitting in a room full of supercomputers as he operates on you, you know, with all the medical knowledge at his fingertips? Or would you rather have a run-of-the-mill MD surgeon, you know? And I personally would go with the surgeon because he'd have access to less knowledge, but that knowledge he has is inside his own head. It's even literally in his own fingertips. So there are areas where it's worthwhile knowing inside our own heads important information. This would apply to whatever a person's profession is, of course, but also to the matters of our own faith. Because if we've internalized them, you know, then they're going to flow out from us and really impact the acts in our daily lives.
Now, would you suggest that we should cut down on learning like extraneous material that wouldn't apply and focus more on, you know, the things that were more pragmatic or practical? Or is it good to have a wider base of knowledge?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's kind of like a golden mean of the two. One, Thomas does talk about a vice of curiositas or curiosity. And this would be where you're too focused on things that don't matter. It's drawing you away from the important things. You know, Aristotle once said it's better to know a little bit about sublime things than a lot about trivial, meaningless things. So I think that's a big problem we have to watch out for in our world today. We're so easily distracted about things that don't matter that we don't focus on the things that matter the most. But on the other hand, it is good to have a wide knowledge base so we can make deeper connections. And just some of the basic categories I recommend are, of course, knowledge of the scriptures, the writings of the saints. In more secular areas, I think general knowledge of philosophy, that the basic of logic and ethics are important. A general sense of history, church history, and even secular world history can be very valuable. And also some of the great classic works of literature are worth knowing. And Thomas himself would sometimes cite from great works of literature. And part of the reason he was such a profound theologian was that he was such a profound philosopher and knew the history of thinkers who came before him. So I think those are important things. Yes, have a broad knowledge base. Don't spend too much time on those little things. But then again, too, Thomas says, too, sometimes we need to refresh and play. So there can be a time for those lighter, more enjoyable, frivolous things, just so they're not, you know, taking the place of deeper periods of study of more important things.
So it's okay for me to play on my cell phone apps, you know, every now and then. But, you know, I should also do some studying as well.
That's right. We all have, like, my hobby is weightlifting. I love to watch these YouTubes of the strongmen contests and so forth. And I do it on a regular basis, but try to, you know, keep it within time limits so I have more time to focus on what's the most important.
Yeah, that kind of dovetails with another point that you make in regards to loving the truth regardless of its source. Yeah, I think that's, you can sometimes dovetail things that maybe aren't directly religious into, you know, still pairing it into truth and, you know, the truths of the faith. Does that make sense?
Oh, it absolutely does. You know, and Thomas and St. Albert before him are so strong in saying that, you know, God's ultimate goodness is beyond our comprehension and is reflected in some small way by every good thing, every good creature, every good thing in existence. So we can learn in some dim way about God from almost anything out in the world that has a goodness of its own. So yes, we can study subjects, you know, scientific subjects like St. Albert the Great, Thomas's teacher, did. You know, he wrote about in detail about squirrels, about different kind of vegetables and plants,
yeah.
Just all kinds of goodness out there in different areas that if we keep in mind everything we see as a creature, it's going to hopefully draw our minds back to the Creator and give us a sense of gratitude for giving us such a wonderful universe.
Yeah, you know, that's something that I think is missing. You could definitely see it in the works of Aquinas where, and he gets it from Aristotle, where even when he's talking about something abstract as motion or change, it goes back to, you know, looking at an animal, how an animal changes or moves, and that there's some parts of the animal are at rest while others are in motion or in act, you know. And ultimately, you know, studying a squirrel can actually be fruitful when you're thinking about highly philosophical terms.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even his famous, you know, five proofs for the existence of God start with the simple things we can see with our senses, you know, that things exist, that they change, that they move, and so forth. So, yeah, Thomas is very much based in common sense, but I think it takes it to its absolute heights.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, sanctity, you know, soaking in the information, you know, not speaking, also focusing, you know, get rid of distractions and ancillary things, you know, but have a proper balance too. You know, very good stuff. Anyone, we have about a minute. Is there anything we're missing that apologists ought to know?
Okay, for even for apologists, I'd say one is simple: and do not fail to imitate the lives of saintly and noble men. And I think that the lives of the great saints, I think hopefully apologists will be immersed in them, because some of those saints were the most wonderful apologists ever, either through their actual arguments or through the way they lived their lives. So I love that idea of Thomas. He says, imitate the lives of saintly men. But he also says noble men, which implies, you know, people who may not be of our faith, but who were wise in certain areas, to be open to their learning, as Thomas was to people like, you know, Aristotle and Plato and Seneca and others.
Very good. Excellent. Wow, what a program. This is great. Dr. Vos, where can people go to find out what you're doing and access your writings?
Yeah, my own website is just drvost.com, just drvost.com, and there's a little comment area in the bottom if anyone would like to contact me.
Beautiful. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Well, it's my great pleasure, Gary. God bless.
Okay, God bless you, too. All right, everybody. So there you have it. I recommend his book, How to Think Like Aquinas. You know, it's always great to sharpen our intellects, you know, to be a good instrument of our Lord, to be handy so that we can go out there and share the faith with charity and clarity. Check out Dr. Vost, VOST.com, and really great stuff from him. So highly recommend it. All right, so... Man, I love having great guests because the hour just flies. It flies. And we have lots of other great guests in store for you this week. Coming up tomorrow, Troy Guy comes back to the dojo, explain how an evangelical discovered the mother of God. Also Wednesday, Thomas Nash, you're probably familiar with him, Catholic Answers. I think he writes for Register as well. He's going to talk about the biblical roots of the Mass. And also Friday, Debbie Herbeck is coming in. She's going to share her journey from Judaism. She grew up as a Jewish and discovered the Catholic faith. And it's an amazing story. So I look forward to talking with Debbie on Friday. And coming up next, you know, the great talk doesn't end. Coming up next, you have the dynamic duo of Catholic Talk Radio, the show that started it all, the Terry and Jesse Show. High impact Catholic talk coming at you. And, man, like I said, I hope you enjoyed the program. It's great to be with you, and thank you so much for tuning in. It's unbelievable, but, yes, it is time to shut down the Midwest Command Center. And thank God we got rid of that echo, because that would have been really annoying for the whole show. Anyway, I wish everybody has a great day, and, you know, start thinking about things like Thomas Aquinas would. You know, put aside some of the childish stuff that we're involved in. Start reading scripture, reading the early church fathers, explaining, defending the faith. What better thing is there? I ask you. All right, everybody. Time for me to turn off the dojo lights. Coming up next, Terry and Jesse Show. I hope everybody has a wonderfully blessed day. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.